Bienvenidos. Welcome, everyone, to our first En Conjunto Table Talk of this academic year. It is my great pleasure to present to you Reverend Eloy Gonzalez, who was a pastor in San Antonio, Texas, after graduating from the Hispanic Institute of Theology, now Center for Hispanic Studies. Served here at Concordia Seminary as Associate Director of the Center, and is now Senior Pastor at Our Redeemer Lutheran Church, Irving, Texas, where he has a thriving bicultural, perhaps even multicultural ministry. And he will speak to us today on the topic, Working in a Bilingual Congregation, Three or More Things You Need to Know. So please help me welcome my brother, our brother, Reverend Eloy Gonzalez.
Thank you, Leopoldo.
Gracias.
I want to thank you for the privilege of being able to talk here today. But I want to also tell you that it would be impossible for me to have the privilege of talking about what's going on at Our Redeemer Lutheran Church had it not been for people that were there before. And many of you in the room know the Reverend Dr. Roberto F. Gonzalez, who is not related by blood, but we are related by the cross. A Cuban pastor who served in many capacities in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And he was my predecessor at Irving, Texas, at Our Redeemer Lutheran Church. And he actually began the impetus there at the congregation to go cross-cultural and did a magnificent job of setting the trajectory. There are still challenges, there are still great joys, but we will have the opportunity to talk about what those are little by little. Leopoldo, thank you for introducing me. I want to take a little bit of time to introduce some of the folks that are here with me from Irving. The lady that's wearing the same color as me over there is Sophia, my wife. She is a member at Our Redeemer Lutheran Church and maybe the person that knows how to keep me most equilibriumed. I just invented a word. On the other side of Sophia, to the right of her, is Juan Antonio Zamora. If you were in chapel this morning, you saw him receive his walking papers from the seminary. And so he received a call from Our Redeemer Lutheran Church to serve as associate pastor there. He would be the third pastor at Our Redeemer. I'm the senior pastor. We have a young man that we placed as associate pastor this summer, Logan Shiwi, that some of you might know that was here in the MDiv program. Juan will be an associate pastor, and the vacant seat will be filled at some point in the very near term. That's Juan's wife, Alma. She is also completing her studies here at Concordia Seminary as a deaconess. She's been a deaconess intern. Juan has been a vicar this past year and more at Our Redeemer. And she also received her call to serve as deaconess at Our Redeemer. So these are the folks that actually make my life a joy and a privilege, and the work that we do to take it to the gates of hell, actually fun. A word of thanks to my friend and esteemed brother, Leopoldo, and to Professor Marcos for continuing the efforts to promote this event, En Conjunto. En Conjunto started a few years ago while I was still here. It was not my brainchild, it was Dr. Sanchez's brainchild, to create a context and a place where we can actually talk about some of the things that have to do with cross-cultural ministry in the Hispanic world. En Conjunto literally means jointly or together, but it's also a word that can be used to describe a set of clothes that complement each other. Traigo un conjunto muy bonito. Or it could be used to describe a musical group or a band. In fact, in South Texas, where I grew up, a conjunto, if you said that word, was known as a band that played at dances and things like that. And isn't it just a wonderful thing for us to be able to think of that particular picture as we're here together, thinking about the music that the Lord can help us to make together, or the fabric that we'll weave in the kingdom of the living God that will reflect something of what heaven will be like Or as St. John puts it in Revelation 7:9, "After this I looked, and behold, a great multitude that no one could number, from every nation, from all tribes and peoples and languages, standing before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed in white robes with palm branches in their hands." I love the concept of reverse engineering. And, you know, the picture and how what it's going to be like, well, we have that already. The Lord has told us what eternity will look like. And what the Lord is doing through your work and through the work that is going on this side of eternity is to drive us in that direction. And isn't that exactly what happens as the Android looks at the iPod and tries to become like it or whatever? Huh? You're trying to take a concept and build it from the back forward. And that's what the Lord is having us do, and it's a beautiful thing. What I hope we can accomplish today, I think I would want us to keep this real. So I want us to talk about real life. What have been your experiences and your challenges as you've thought about this? What are your fears as you think about the possibility of going into cross-cultural ministry? I'd like to talk a little bit about the joys, but the challenges of doing cross-cultural ministry. And I'd like for us to mutually encourage one another. Talk about how you can serve the person seated next to you, or maybe encourage them to take a risk and try a little bit of this stuff. And then I want us to dialogue. So please feel free at any place along the way to just say, let's talk about that for a little bit. Let's engage that thought. Let's engage that conversation. I'm going to leave time at the end of everything to do that, but I don't mind stopping and spending some time and just dialoguing along the way. At the last symposium, Dr. Meyer did a presentation. And I don't know how many of you were there at his presentation in one of the plenaries. And he talked about how we have a tendency to talk like we're driving on an expressway going 90 miles an hour. And he said, sometimes you just need to get off the highway, get into a parking lot, spend a little bit of time there, and check out the scenery. I don't mind doing that when I talk. Okay? In fact, I wouldn't even mind doing that in sermons. I've actually tried to do that to engage the congregation in a conversation as we talk about stuff. Here we have great and ample opportunity, so feel free to do that. So those are my thoughts and my hopes as we go forward. Is there anything that you want to see besides what I talked about? Nada. Okay, let's move forward. Let's talk about liminality. I think there's a, isn't there a band out there called Liminality? Liminality, Will, you were going to say something?
No, I was just trying to think. I don't think I've heard of that one.
Okay. Liminality is an interesting concept or an interesting term. Think about a river flowing from somewhere where the land is higher down toward the ocean. And right as it goes into the ocean, in an estuary area, the ecosystem is very, very different from where either the river came or from the ocean itself. You might have this brackish water environment where life from the ocean begins to engage life from the freshwater systems, and the stuff that's going on here is kind of changing and different and distinct. I would want you to think about cross-cultural ministry and bilingual ministry in those sort of contexts. Because you're not either dealing with completely English, if you're talking about cross-cultural ministry from an English context, nor Spanish, if you're trying to go Hispanic. You're going to be dealing with English at one side, Spanish on the other, and then something in the middle here that's maybe a blend of both that's a little bit different. And why is liminality an important thing to sort of consider as you engage this? I want you to think about what having an active, focused outreach to people of another language group, I want you to think about what that might cause to happen within the context of an established congregation. And it really puts some energy into thinking about what might happen there. What happens as you have some people in this English community that say, well, look at our church and the neighborhood where it's in. There's a lot of Hispanics that are moving in here, and we want to try to do some outreach, and we want to open our doors. And let's say that you're good at it, and people begin to respond, and this congregation begins to see the presence of more and more people who come into that congregation speaking a different language, maybe having different cultural values, maybe having different kinds of priorities or seeing life from an entirely different worldview. And then you're trying to blend them in. Now, I assure you that there's going to be people in this people group that are going to say, well, they're welcome to come in here, but they have to become just like us. And the people that are coming in are going to be saying, well, you know, I'm really interested in what's going on there, but I'm not going to give up everything that I am to be part of it. And so what ends up happening is that you have this sort of middle group that says, well, you know, I can hang with the folks that speak English, and the folks that speak English saying, I can hang with the folks that speak Spanish. And so what begins to happen to your congregation and to your fellowship? Well, you begin to grow different communities. And remember that that almost pulls at the fabric of what you're trying to do as a congregation or as a church. Because what are you trying to do? You're trying to build this unity under the cross, moving toward eternity together, right? This caravan sort of concept. And when you begin to do that kind of outreach, what you actually do, because of language and because of culture, is to begin to create the sort of liminality that leaves some people in between, leaves some people out here, and leaves some people out here. Fresh water, brackish water, salt water. English, this sort of blend, Spanish. And now you're going to have to deal with those differences. So you have to think about that, and you have to deal with that idea and that concept. Have you experienced anything like that in your lifetime working in churches? Have you dealt with issues that look like that? I see one or two people shaking their head. Mark, I'll have to repeat everything you say, but I want to invite you to share a little bit about your experience.
Well, perhaps this work in the Latin American setting, where you had people from different countries serving in the same congregation. The language may not have been the issue, but it was the coming together, and I like those three areas that you discussed.
Okay. So from your experience as a Latin American missionary, you're talking about bringing people from different Latin American backgrounds together to try to get them to coexist in the same place. Hey, listen, something as simple as bringing together potluck meal among just Hispanics who are coming from different places can be an interesting challenge, because you serve a Mexican hot dish to Professor Rodolfo Blank, whose Hispanic sort of context is Venezuela. And, well, I'm not sure how well that goes down. Maybe it goes down beautifully, but I'm not positive about that. And you serve sort of this, I don't want to call it bland. Let's just call it unspicy Salvadoran food to a Mexican. And they're going to say, what are you giving me here? Right? Something as simple as that in a potluck context is maybe a good metaphor to suggest what might happen with this idea or this issue of liminality. Dr. Sanchez.
Just to speak a little on how difficult it is to think of two as one. Hmm. Because usually what happens is people say the Hispanic congregation meeting at this time, the English congregation meeting at this time. It's hard for people to actually think of one congregation having two different services.
Expressions, you know, or whatever. I mean? Yeah, yeah.
People actually sort of think and talk that way.
Yeah. So the idea of identity, when you have two different groups that are worshiping in different languages and you talk about one group worshiping at a particular place maybe in a particular time, and maybe the second group is worshiping at another place even within the same congregation at a different time, it kind of makes a Y instead of going the other way and joining,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay. And there are many more issues than just those things that we have brought out. How about things like, well, how people dress? I want to tell you a story about my dad. When I first was introduced to the Lutheran Church, I have to say that I had a cultural understanding of church and God. But then as the Lord led me to an understanding of what Christ actually accomplished for me through the cross and the forgiveness that he offers, I wanted my father to have that. And so I invited him to church several times, and he really never went until one time he accepted. My dad always dressed in the way you see Professor Kempf dressing during the summers, in a guayabera. Never saw him in anything but a guayabera. So he went to church with me, where everybody was wearing a coat and tie, and we went in there and we worshiped, and I loved worship. I was in heaven. And Dad walked out, and I said, "What do you think, Dad?" He said, "Son, it was okay, but I'm never coming back again." And we didn't, until we started going to a Spanish mission, and I invited him, and he said he would go. And he saw other people dressed in guayaberas, and he heard people speaking in the language that was his heart language. And he saw that the pastor could relate to him much more easily. And from that point onward, he was hooked, and he heard the gospel, and the Lord grabbed him. To such an extent that I remember when I was serving sort of as an interim in one of the churches where Dad also went, I noticed that he always gave $8 a week to the church. And so one time after church, we were just talking, and I said, "Dad, that's such a weird number, $8 a week. Why are you giving $8 a week to the church?" He said, "Son, I get $220 from the VA. I get about $100 from my Social Security." And this is a while back. About $100 from Social Security, $320 total. A tenth of that is 32. And I divided it by four, and that's $8. So that's, he was talking to me in Spanish. "Ese es el diezmo, no? That's the tithe, isn't it?" Well, you know, he was hooked, a man who was getting that little, giving a tithe of it. And so culture, this idea of bridging the gap, of understanding liminality and how it can create divisions, as well as through the gospel bring unity, is something that we have to be very sharp about. How about things about, that's what I wanted to highlight with the idea of dress. How about sports? Is it possible that sports might create an issue in a congregation? Unity, yes. Division, also. How about what do you think would happen in a congregation that has a blend of folks from North America and a blend of folks from Latin America worshiping together, and somebody mentions the World Cup and who they will be rooting for? Believe me, there's going to be differences and distinctions. I have seen it and heard it with my own eyes and ears. Differences in how families interact, both with each other. Differences in the way that children are reared. Differences even in the very core values of what families are about will begin to surface in these areas of liminality and difference as you begin to engage just with the issue of bilingualism, because you're drawing by nature not only differences in language, but differences in culture. Thoughts, questions, comments about this area? Will?
There can be differences in your religious background. I recall many years ago there was a prison ministry program starting up in our area, and a very gracious group of people from a Catholic church invited us Lutherans in there to meet and yeah. join on this project. And likewise, there were people in the background that really didn't want to have anything to do with Lutheranism and precisely, you know, and some hurdles to overcome there.
So you're saying that things besides language can begin to create these distinctions when the intent is to bring unity and draw together? Sure, makes sense. Dr. Sanchez.
I'm just thinking how liminality is you know, it's kind of a complex concept in the sense that you might have people in different places. You know, for your father, he was more on the side of, you know, the river waters, maybe. Spanish language, Hispanic, Southwest culture.
Dress.
And he wouldn't have been able to even consider church or even gospel if all that was presented to him was
what he
seawater.
Saw. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
You know, so,
absolutely.
So you almost have to deal with all levels at the same time, depending on who you're talking about.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You know, so you could think of it as divisive in some cases, but in other cases, you have to start somewhere along the spectrum.
Good point. Yes, sir. Tell me your name, please.
My name is Drew.
Drew.
Drew, yeah.
Drew.
What are the differences between generations in this whole life?
Oh, huge, huge. Yeah, I was going to talk a little bit about that later, but I think it's also a good time to bring it out now. Okay, so the first generation that comes over, very rooted in the culture and language of the nation that they came from, extremely so. Second generation often will have their feet planted in both cultures. And in fact, when I was growing up in the 50s and 60s in school, they tried to whip the second culture out of you. I mean, literally, if you went to school and the threat was, if we catch you speaking Spanish, you will be paddled. You have to speak only English. So I remember going to class one time and the teacher said to me and a friend of mine, go to the chalkboard and do this. And she was talking English. And of course, at home, all I knew was Spanish. This is beginners. Beginners would be the grade before first grade. And she said, pick up the chalk. And you know, it would be like me telling you, mira, levántate y fíjate de la persona que está detrás de ti. Would you know what to do? Well, yeah, I didn't know what to do either. But she finally started doing like this, and I came to the board. And then she wanted me to pick up the chalk because she wanted us to write something. And I didn't know what she was saying. Neither did the other guy. Both of us were completely lost. And she thought that we were clowning around. So she got angry with us. And she told us to go back and sit down. And she had a switch. And as we passed, she took a switch to the other guy who was very fast. And he jumped out of the way, made her even angrier so that when I went by, she really got me, see? But that's kind of in between, okay? And then I can talk to you about my kids. My kids understand enough Spanish to talk to their grandparents and to us if we engage them in Spanish, but their language of preference is English. Is that your experience with your children, Dr. Sanchez?
Yeah, definitely with my older child. The other one is in a Spanish immersion school. So she's a bit more bilingual.
Okay.
But, yeah. But, you know, it's a different time, too, in the sense that we're now whipping people or whipping the culture out of people nowadays. But you meant that as a metaphor.
No metaphor. It was for real. Rigo.
When you first started your presentation, it said bilingual. I guess I'm considered a bilingual person because I can read and write both languages and translate them and all that.
Yeah.
In this presentation, when you say bilingual, what does that mean? It means that the service is going to be in English and Spanish, or it's going to be separate services, or what?
I didn't take it that way when I didn't take it as a joint service, okay. Even though we do that periodically just so that the groups can interact with each other. But I took it as what happens when you have a congregation that's trying to work in both worlds.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah,
they have
yeah.
an English service and
yeah,
Spanish.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And trying to deal with the dynamics that creates.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Other questions, thoughts, or comments? Okay. Let's move to the next area. Okay, this is you know, liminality is the basic foundation of what I'm going to talk about today. But here's one expression of it in the administration of the church. Okay, so right from the get-go, our congregation wanted to go whole hog into this cross-cultural ministry. And so they actually created seats for Hispanics who were becoming members of the church to be able to be voted on. So, for example, in the elders board, we have 3 seats for Hispanic elders that are reserved for that. No matter how many other folks are elected, there's 3 seats for Hispanic elders to serve the people who come to our Spanish language service. Christian Education has seats for Hispanic people to come and offer input about materials and things that they need, and so on. Well, it's not a bad deal, right? It seems like it's a very wonderful and gracious thing to do. So you communicate this to folks that, hey, we're looking for people to serve as elders in this church. We're looking for people to serve on the Board of Christian Education. And you're talking to people who are, well, maybe from a Roman Catholic background, who are somewhat accustomed to going to church, participating in an hour of worship, and then kind of going home, and not necessarily assuming a full role and responsibility for making sure that those things happen within the church. Or you're dealing with a group of people, maybe first generation people, that have to spend a lot of their time and energy just making it, to be able to pay the rent, to be able to pay for the gasoline that has just gone up another third from what they used to pay, or groceries, or and all of a sudden meetings and formalities begin to drop in their level of importance. And so we have 3 Hispanic elders who are always welcome to come to an elders meeting, who rarely show up. We have people who are voted to the Board of Christian Education who are invited to come and sit in on those meetings and bring the needs forward, who maybe have shown up once in the whole time that board has been constituted. And you have that kind of challenge. And so what we see as the way to do business and to do church isn't always valued in the same way that we value it in this culture and maybe another culture that we're trying to engage and interact with. Yes, sir?
I've found that Latinos tend to want to discuss things a lot more and aren't so accustomed to having a vote and then saying, okay, if 6 people want to do something and vote yes, and 4 people vote no,
yeah,
then the decision is made and all 10 people move ahead with the decision.
Yeah.
So talk about that some, because that's another big cultural difference.
That's a very interesting thing, Tom. I'm glad you brought it up, that where you're almost talking about a zero-sum situation, because a particular majority, even if it was very slim, decided to go a particular direction, that necessarily drives the whole group out in that direction. No, you're right. And many people simply, when something like that happens, is, Leopoldo, ya sabes que se decidió que mañana vamos a hacer esta cosa. ¿Vas a venir? Leo, you know it was decided that tomorrow we're going to do this particular thing. Are you coming? And the response from Leo, who was maybe not on the winning side, might be something like, pues, ahí veremos. We'll see. That's a no. You've got to know that's a no. Okay? Won't come. So that's actually a very good...
By majority vote.
No. So listen, you've opened up a really interesting... How are things done? What is the dynamic that actually...
Consensus
and relationships.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You're engaging people, you're talking to people, you're dialoguing with people.
A lot more.
Yeah. A lot more. That's why Alma and Juan are taking a break right now. Driving 10 hours is taking a break, okay?
Yeah. It's a big hurdle to get over for people who think like us.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we're all democratic, you make a decision, everybody moves ahead.
Yeah.
And you find out half of it aren't with you.
You know the interesting thing that's happening, and I hate to tie it to the secular world right now, but you know that that dynamic we're seeing more and more in the way that our national government works? Do you see how difficult it is to move beyond a particular point? Because I think it's maybe postmodern, right? Yeah. More relational.
You've used categories before in other presentations of process versus goal.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Remind me of what I said.
Cultural differences on how, you know, process is more important in some cultures.
Ah, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
To the goal.
Yeah. I think that came out of a conversation that we had, or a presentation that we had, where our culture may be somewhat driven by time and having to accomplish a certain number of things by a certain time. the idea of how you accomplish something is just as critical as what you accomplish and by when you accomplish, at least in the Hispanic culture. My old mentor, the sainted Reverend Dr. Eugene Gruhl, used to say, the process is the product, when it came to ministry among Hispanics. The process is the product. Not what you actually accomplished, but the way that you engage it and do it is the product. It's interesting.
I have another question on, when I visited Redeemer, Durante and the Tiempo de Roberto, he and Pastor McFarland were representing it as one congregation worshiping in two languages, and how difficult that had been for them to get to that point where people were willing to accept that. Is that still the concept, or has that evolved?
Well, of course, you know that Dr. Gonzalez is in heaven now, and a couple of months after that, Dr. McFarland took a call to North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Congregation was vacant for a couple of years before they called me. Mm-hmm. And when I got there, the congregation was lovingly, had loving distinctions among the different groups. Mm-hmm. So there was a group that was worshiping traditional early, a group that was worshiping contemporary, and a group that was worshiping in Spanish. And my own perception was that it was not one group. And my challenge has been over the last several years to find a way to draw unity. This concept of liminality and the differences in worship style and language and cultures present has created a variety of groups. All of them call themselves Our Redeemer Lutheran Church or Iglesia Luterana Nuestro Redentor. And there is this vague notion that we are one. But in reality, I think that we're functioning more closely as three separate congregations rather than one unified congregation.
Do you think that's normal and that'll just evolve over a number of years? I mean, is there really a problem? What are the problems associated?
I think the biggest problem is just sinful humanity. I think that the idea of coming under the cross of Jesus Christ and recognizing that as our primary mm-hmm. goal is what will draw us together. And as long as the other things receive the grease, the language, the worship style, they will only serve to keep us from seeing that true unity we have in Christ.
I guess I'm playing devil's advocate for a minute. A question that could be asked is that a big deal if there are three separate groups?
May not be. May not be, but here.
Our goal to bring them all together is unrealistic and not really necessary.
On this side of eternity, yeah. Yeah, I know that at the end of the day, that's what the Lord Jesus Christ is going to do. We have the vision, right?
Sure.
And to the degree that I can, I would desire, as an idealist sort of in formation and orientation, I would desire that. I would love that. I would want that. But the reality is that at the end of the day, we are sinful, and me is probably more important than you. And that drives a lot of the things that happen, not just at Our Redeemer, but in our synod, beyond. In Christian.
I just wonder how much energy going in and try to bring them together versus, you know, ministering to them in where they are would lead to that more sort of natural progression as they grow in their faith.
Yeah, it may be that at the end of the day, what will need to happen is that we plant three different churches. This is Spanish language Redentor 1, this is contemporary Redentor 2, and this is traditional Redentor 3. Yeah.
You know, because in Anglo, I've been involved with a fairly large Anglo congregation. Mm-hmm. Still, I'm somewhat associated, and you know the 8 o'clock worshipers barely know the 9:30 worshipers, who barely know the 11 o'clock worshipers. Yeah. And
agree.
They all worship in the same language.
Agree.
But
agree.
They don't even recognize each other.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, once
yeah.
the contemporaries are, you know. So I'm wondering if it's
worth it.
You know what
nice
I'm saying?
Whether it's
nice
worth
thing
it.
The thing about liminality is that it allows you to deal seriously with unity questions.
Mm-hmm.
While at the same time meeting people where they're at, and that's kind of it's more complex than just having one way of.
But is it unity for the sake of unity, or is there some driving reason why we want them all to be more?
I have a driving reason, and the driving reason is Jesus Christ. So that's my goal, right? That's
I'm not saying
I understand. So I had a conversation with an old guy yesterday. Okay, I mentioned that in the sermon today.
Having another one now.
No. this man has a depth of wisdom. He's the one that told me about the crickets if you were in chapel today. And I actually asked him some of the questions that you're asking me. I said, I'm finding myself somewhat challenged by this idea that we have three groups that don't disrespect each other, but don't intentionally want to blend and mingle with the others. You know, the first service people are first service, the second service people are second service, and the Hispanics are Hispanic service. How would you engage that? And he said, I only have about 7 sermons that I preach. One of them is the cross of Jesus Christ and how he came to unite the world together. The second one is Pentecost and how that is the reverse of Babel. And so he went on talking about those things. And then he said to me, the other thing is on you. A congregation will always find a reason to argue and fight with each other when the pastor's chair turns over every 2 or 3 years. The best solution for a congregation that's united is a pastor that is consistently on message for a long, long period of time. And he said, when I arrived at this church, it was deeply divided, the church where he serves, but I've been here 20-some years, and now I find that there's a sort of synchronicity among the groups that are in the church. I'm going to move on for the sake of time because we've got 15 more minutes. One more point. Vicar Juan and Deaconess Inter and Alma are very, very dynamic people in terms of connecting with community. Very, very, I'm incredibly blessed to be partners with them in the work they do. Both of them have an entrepreneurial spirit that they're willing to try things and risk things. Try that when you have a church that has line items and budgets for things that need to be done. And so you communicate, I need a plan. If I'm going to spend money and draw money from a budget, I need to see where this is going to come from, because otherwise I'm not going to be able to convince the people that are going to fund it to give it to me. And that is a bit of a challenge. If you're dealing with people that come from a community that serve from the heart and move from the heart rather than from line items and budgets, that's hard to do. It's almost as hard as getting students from the Center for Hispanic Studies to do all the assignments or to even know which ones they were supposed to turn in. Is that a challenge for you? Okay. I want to show you a little video clip. Do you mind? Here we go. I'm going to turn up sound as high as it'll go. It won't be really high, but you don't need the sound as much as you need the video. Thank you. Okay, so did you see who sponsored this film or who put this little video clip together? At the end, the logo, Univision, the television station. Okay, so you know why they're doing this, right? You know why they're promoting this video. It's pretty clear. I mean, you don't even need to read between the lines. They know that there is a demographic out there that manufacturers and people who sell products and services can target through their television and radio affiliates, and they can convince them to go out and spend money and therefore make money for the advertisers that they're trying to sell advertising space to. They're not just promoting the new Hispanic reality or whatever, they're trying to sell advertising, okay? But the question that I have for you is, if businesses are taking demographics into account for the sake of money, shouldn't the church also have the courage to deal with numbers, even though it's not an easy thing to do, for the sake of souls? And I'm going to give you an example from Irving, Texas. Okay, so if you look at Irving, Texas, the number of folks there is about 216,000. That's total. But if you begin to break it down, you're going to see that the Hispanic population of Irving is pretty substantial. It approaches 90,000 people from that 216 or 17,000, okay? So it's a sizable chunk of that population. So now you're sitting there in your church council meeting and you're saying, look at our neighborhoods and here are the numbers. They actually bear out the fact that we are hugely Hispanic and that the neighborhood has lots of Hispanics living here. As if you didn't know by looking at the playgrounds and the schools and stuff like that, but here, this is from the 2010 census, now you know for sure. So you say, okay, so let's do Hispanic ministry. Well, so here is the deal. When people think about Hispanic ministry in the LCMS, one of my experiences has been is that Hispanic ministry is seen as a monolith. You know, like you remember 2001 A Space Odyssey? That big, dark obelisk that came out. That's it. Hispanic ministry is just one solid block, and that's the way you deal with it. But I would assure you that it's not. If you drill down just a little bit and you begin to look at the numbers out there for the demographics, and this is from the same city, you begin to see that most of that Hispanic population, 64,000 of it, is Mexican. Hey, amigo, tenemos como 1,000 puertorriqueños también, eh? Cubans, we have a few hundred. Dominicans, 196. Central Americans, a lot of Salvadorans and so on, 15,000. So where are you going to target if you really want to begin to deal with it? And by the way, is there a difference among all these different Hispanics? Are they all the same? Hugely different. You take a Puerto Rican from New York and you compare them with a Salvadoran, and you're talking about the difference between a German and a Filipino. I mean, you're talking about two entirely different people, completely different worldviews, people that are entirely different, and you don't engage them the same way. So Hispanic ministry at Our Redeemer Lutheran Church was having some issues and struggles, until Juan and Alma showed up and began to target this community. Not excluding anybody else who wanted to come along, but Juan and Alma are Mexican. They know Mexican customs, Mexican holidays, Mexican styles of interacting, and they begin to engage people with things that would connect with them. And then the ministry really began to take off and look different, because they were able to devise a strategy to interact with a target population. Before, we had about one strategy, and you mentioned it, ESL. Well, this is the model of our Hispanic outreach now. ESL is one component of it, and it is a strong component of it. We still see a couple of hundred people twice a week that come into the church to learn English, okay? And it's wonderful. But I would want to tell you that out of those couple of hundred people that come to church, even though we engage them and interact with them, a handful go to worship services. So we take care of young people for the parents that are in there up to about high school age. And one day Juan came to me and said, you know, these kids are just sort of doing stuff here do you mind if I just take them out to the backyard and show them, you know, how to do some stuff with a soccer ball? I said, Juan, go for it. So he took them out there and he started showing them a few moves with a soccer ball. And it was just a few kids the first time, maybe 5-7 kids. And then the next time they invited some of their friends and it was maybe 10. And then there was more who invited their friends. And then our backyard in the church was too small. So he said, Pastor, I can't do this here anymore. There's too many kids. We have to go down the street to the park. So they went to the park and it was now the families would come and be a part of this. And then all of a sudden we talked to the youth board and said, listen, we have a bunch of kids that are coming together to do here. Do you think that you could support buying some uniforms and maybe we can put together a soccer team that they can play in a league? Absolutely, they did. They put the money forward. We made the case. We investigated how much it would cost to do all these things. And then they wanted a team for the little kids. So the little preschool kids of the families that came in started to get together to practice soccer. And then it was the kids between them and them. And then it was the dads that wanted to play. But at the end of the day, now we have 5 soccer teams that play. Juan has identified people to kind of lead each of the groups and has kind of prepared them and taught them and coordinates them through text messaging and phone calls and things like that. And so where you have soccer and ESL interacting together, this year we very intentionally said, let's reserve some seats in our ESL program for the parents that also participate in soccer. And so where you find this little area in here, the intersection of ESL and soccer, the parents that are in both of those things are more likely to participate in other kinds of church events. So then Alma said, well, maybe we need to start doing something with the ladies. And so she recommended Zumba, which is kind of a Latin-style jazzercise classes. So we opened up our church, and Alma invited a group of ladies, 5, 6, 7 initially. It's grown to 2 groups that meet Tuesday through Friday for 1 hour. Maybe 60 people total, 60 moms with the little kids. During the summer, more kids because they're out of school, and Alma does a little sort of VBS every day, Tuesday through Friday. And so where we have the Zumba ladies participating in ESL, or where we have the Zumba folks and the soccer participating together, where these sweet spots are, we have more participation in the worship services. But when you have a family or 2 or 3 that do all of those things, they're into the church. They worship, they become leaders, they do stuff. So the idea is that you use these things that are not church. They're not church at all. But there are opportunities to interact. Hey, ¿cómo estás? ¿Cómo te ha ido? ¿Cómo está tu familia? Mira, tienes hijos, son bautizados, te podemos servir. Tienes una hija que va a cumplir 15. Podemos hacer una quinceañera. Where you can engage them and just treat them and deal with them and work with them. Now you have opportunities for critical mass and movement, and people will start to attend church. And then you let the Holy Spirit go wild with the word. You make sure you talk about the cross and the resurrection when they do come to church, and you let the Holy Spirit bring them into the kingdom. But the opportunity that you get by just interacting is incredible. And that's what these next slides talk about. You know, where you have these sweet spots, there's connection. And where you have these other multiple overlaps, folks stick. And if you all have read Nelson Searcy's book on fusion, that's somewhat what he talks about, communicating and engaging people at multiple levels so that they stick to the church. Intentionally, at these activities like soccer and Zumba and ESL, you incorporate prayer and service into the relationships and you invite folks. And you don't fear the data. You know, you look at the numbers. You know, pastors are, for some reason or another, afraid of dealing with the numbers. And you have to, because that's one way to see if the things that you're doing make sense. It's like most of the boards in the churches. You know, the boards are, but you try to talk about follow up. See how what kind of impact those policies are having. Are they attracting people or pushing people away? People don't go there. Same with congregations. So what I've done is really track attendance at our Redeemer Lutheran Church for a couple of years. This is just from January to the end of September. This is the attendance at the different worship services altogether. And this is the line of best fit. If any of you are into statistics, the regression line through there. Okay, and you see the trend of the regression line is a nice, sweet increase. Our traditional worship, all by itself, without contemporary, without Hispanic, a little bit of an increase. Our contemporary worship, without Hispanic, without traditional, pretty much flatlined, a loss of a little bit less than one. Our Hispanic has a really sweet slope. It's the smallest of the worship services, but the way it's trending, it's moving up, and if it continues to trend this way, in a few years it'll be the biggest worship service we have at the church. Here is what happens when you have English participation without Spanish participation. Pretty darn close to flat. And so one of the things that I'm trying to communicate, one of the dynamics, one of the things that you can know is that as you bring different cultures together and have them interact, and if you're really letting the Lord lead you and you're creative and you're engaging this thing with joy, the Lord can help a congregation that is somewhat flat to really enjoy some greater participation.
So just to be clear, that graph is both English services without the Spanish?
Both English services without the Spanish. Yeah. So the increase that you see is a little bit flatter because it's bigger numbers,
right.
But you see a little bit of an increase because of the traditional increase. In our context, yes. Yeah. Yep. Finally, and to close, and without a whole lot of time left, you somehow need to deal with issues that have to do with immigration. There's no getting around it. Okay? There's a lot of Hispanics in this country. The largest growing subsegments are second and third generation, but there's a lot of first generation Hispanics who are in this country. And they're not documented, and somehow you need to make calls and choices along the way of how you're going to deal with that. Will you engage people who are undocumented? Will you ask them to help be leaders in the church if it seems that they have the gifts and the qualities and the desire to be so? How will you so serve those families that might have a member who is in hot water with immigration? I've had to visit folks who immigration has detained and is deporting. And deal with the aftermath with families that are separated. You have to think about things like that if you're going to engage, at least in the Hispanic world, in this sort of bilingual, bicultural contexts. I've talked a lot. I'm ready to hear what you might have to say. Jason.
Yeah, you talked about targeting a specific culture and how you targeted Mexicans because you have people who know that culture. For someone like me, out of any of those cultures, what's the way to go about targeting the best fit, I guess?
Yeah, yeah. If I were doing this systematically, I would understand what's around my church, right? So if it's 1% Hispanic and 80% Hindi, clearly your target is not going to be the 1% Hispanic. So the first thing you need to do is to learn a little bit about the culture. You need to get out there and meet and greet and see if you can get somebody who really understands it to partner with you. I would also suggest to you that you're not alone out there. I would hope that you're not alone when you go out there to do ministry. You will have people from your district offices that I think are mostly willing to help and offer suggestions. And I would talk with them. At least where we serve, our district offices are very open to offer suggestions, to offer help, sometimes even to offer resources. And also your circuit brothers. Maybe you don't have to wear the whole thing yourself. Maybe you can come together with groups of them and say, hey, listen, this area where we serve together in has 80% Hindi people here. Let's see what we can do to try to reach them. So you know, there's practical things that you can do, and you don't have to wear the whole load yourself.
Thanks.
Absolutely.
And I think in the broader scheme of things, you always get to do maybe part of something larger that's that might happen over time. So you might actually set foundations for someone else to come later mm-hmm. and keep doing part of the rest of the work.
Sure.
And that still will be a foundation. So you might not get to see all the fruits of your labor mm-hmm. right away.
I think your the district can also help with demographics. Usually the LCEF guy or the
Yeah.
And then sometimes circuits, the other brothers, they may not be where you're at. So you can't be discouraged either.
Yeah.
But I think you do have to get the numbers. Yeah. And then get someone who knows the culture. You know, you have to find someone that will lead you to somebody. If there are that many people, 80% Hindi, somebody's out there you can connect with.
That's a good point.
Yeah, you just have to get somebody. We do a lot better in Kansas City because I work with a couple of really dedicated
So I'm Mexican American, born in Deep South Texas. My Spanish is not the same Spanish as the people from Jalisco or from San Luis Potosí speak. If I try to go and engage people with the Spanish that I speak, they're gonna look at me and say, "Oye, ¿qué tienes tú? What's the matter with you?" You know.
What water you came from?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Are you fresh water or what? but and culturally the same, culturally the same. And so the thing that Juan and Alma brought to the picture is this ability to relate perfectly to people, Now, part of it I don't like, because I'm not limited in terms of being able to interact with other people. You always want to interact as Christ would with other people of other cultures and languages. But the fact of the matter is that when you're dealing with the unchurched, you're dealing with the with folks that are not going to feel simpatico with you necessarily because you're a Christian. They're going to feel simpatico with you because they can relate to you. And so you begin there. You begin with that opportunity. Paul talks about it, right? I can become all things to all people so that by all possible means I might be able to reach some. He says save some, but we know the Spirit does that.
And then be involved over a long period of time so they see your heart. And
sure.
And be willing to be self-effacing and not be an authority all the time.
Yeah,
so they, I know a pastor who speaks terrible Spanish and has about 10 words and slaughters it with a Southern accent. But over time, before he involves someone from here, they got to know his heart, and before he got help, they were already starting to love him and relate to him.
Absolutely.
They could see the light.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Rigo.
So, Juan and Alma, they're in the Hispanic community. How do they do with the English congregation? Do they mix there too, or you are the ones that in between both of them, or English and Spanish?
Yeah.
Because it's got to be a connection, right?
Yeah.
I mean, someone that can relate to both.
Yeah.
So that's you.
Okay, so I'm gonna show you some of the thinking that I've tried to engage in the context of our congregation. Somehow, the Holy Spirit led the congregation to call me there. And I figured that it was not because I'm good looking, because check it out. So maybe they wanted something else, right? And so what I hope that they would want is maybe a sense of direction, a sense of missional impetus and emphasis. So I see myself sort of as this interface. I'm a proclaimer. I've preached in all the services, and I still preach in at least one every Sunday. But I try to make opportunities for one to engage the English-speaking folks. For Logan, my associate, who we just called to interact with the Spanish-speaking folks, and to sort of create this lab like you all did in chapel this morning, where the white boy spoke in Spanish and the brown boy spoke in English, right? So create this lab in the context of a congregation so that folks have an opportunity to see that the gospel transcends race and culture, and that it is about Jesus Christ, and that Juan can lead in worship, as well as Logan can lead in worship, as well as Eloy can lead in worship. So just to create this opportunity, and because they called me there, I feel that if I make those choices as we decide how we lead worship on a particular Sunday, the congregation will accept it and be open to it. Sometimes it's a battle. You know, it depends on what side of the brackish water you're on. Sometimes you do have to struggle through it. And that's why I mentioned that to you. You have to be ready to engage, you know, those issues that arise because of liminality. But you're dealing with Christians, and you deal with them as a Christian. And I think that you can usually make a case. At a minimum, they'll say, well, okay, let's try it.